The Jewel is written and performed by Amanda Keats.
The Jewel was the stuff of legend, always gossiped about but rarely, if ever, actually seen. Those who claimed to have witnessed the Jewel's beauty firsthand always began their tales with, "I know this person whose friend is married to," and then be greatly offended when the authenticity of said tale was called into question. Because the Jewel was a person, not an item, and a criminal at that. A woman, to be precise, and one who possessed the unmistakable ability to charm anyone she wished and make them do her bidding usually being the theft of valuable items. Nobody, however, who claimed to have come into contact with her, ever had a bad word to say, even when police were called and threats made by the authorities. "I'd do it again," they'd say, "if only she'd come back." They regretted nothing, even those whose priceless heirlooms had been taken during their brief dalliance with the Jewel. There was a longing there, so reported the papers, which the Jewel always seemed to leave behind. It tickled me, truly, that people could be so easily duped. To me it showed no self-control on their part, no integrity. They were just floating about in the breeze, waiting to be led and moulded by whoever came along and gave them a gentle nudge in one direction or another. That was all back before I met the Jewel in person. I was having breakfast at my local cafe when she approached and asked if she could sit with me. Of course, I didn't know who the woman was at that point, but she seemed pleasant enough, so I told her yes, even though I was aware of the three empty tables nearby, and she sat down. "Excuse me," she said, waving over the waitress. "Can I trouble you for a tea? Strong, not much milk, no sugar." She beamed a delightful smile at the waitress that seemed to lift the sullen mood the woman had possessed when she first turned around to respond to the call. Weighed down by piles of empty plates which were carefully positioned across her arms like a well-practiced circus manoeuvre, the waitress smiled back and then looked at me. "Anything for you, miss?" she asked. I shook my head. After all, in the time since the Jewel had sat down at my table, less than a minute, I'd guess, I had quite lost any desire for food. She was utterly enchanting, and I was hooked. "So," she said, helping herself to a piece of toast from my plate, "what do I call you?" I watched as she took a bite, and I envied the grace with which she was able to perform such an unseemly task. "Meredith Jangularia," I spluttered, suddenly aware that I hadn't yet swallowed my previous mouthful. As I chewed hurriedly and swallowed it, she smiled again. This time, however, I got the full impact. That smile was for me. I had caused it. And the ecstasy it evoked in me was unlike anything I'd ever felt before. "That's quite a mouthful," she said, with a hint of a giggle that only made her that much more captivating to my inexperienced eyes. She wiped the hand she'd just been using to eat with on a serviette, and then extended it to me. "Christine Collier," she said. "Pleasure." I took the hand and shook it, suddenly overcome with feelings of woeful inadequacy. Against my rough, callous, unmanicured fingers, hers seemed to glow with elegance and beauty. "Oh, you poor thing," she continued, her eyes scrunching in concern at the mere sight of them. "We must get you to my beautician. The lady's a miracle worker. She'll have your hands glowing by the time she's done with you, I guarantee it." I tried to pull my hand away, embarrassed, but she held it firmly with one hand and patted it gently with the other. "I'm sorry," I said, not entirely sure for what I was apologising. "Never apologise," she said firmly. "That is rule one."
"Rule one?"
She smiled again, but this time it was an entirely new smile, full of mischief and excitement. "Stick with me," she said, finally relinquishing her hold, on my hand at least. "You're not hungry?" she asked, as the waitress returned with her tea. Yes, I was, so why had I stopped eating? I picked up my fork and continued, taking smaller mouthfuls this time to avoid any possibility of embarrassment. "I saw you earlier," she said. "Outside, around the corner?"
"You saw me?"
"You live nearby, I presume. That was your house?"
Oh, Lord, had she seen and heard everything?
"I just wanted to say I was impressed."
"Impressed?" I asked, my cheeks reddening with anger. He wasn't that impressive.
She laughed then, a loud, passionate and unrestrained laugh that made her head fall back slightly as if making room for the laugh to escape. When the laugh had subsided, she dropped her head back to its usual position and smiled at me. "My dear lady," she said. "It was you who so impressed me, not that vile husband of yours."
"You're acquainted with my husband?" I asked.
"Not at all. Only what I saw of his character on your front steps.
You did see that then. Oh, I'm so embarrassed.
Why on earth would you be embarrassed? You were marvellous.
What?
Meredith. Can I call you Meredith?
She asked the question but didn't wait for the answer.
Meredith, listen. I saw how he treated you and I saw how you stood your ground. You didn't flinch, no matter how many insults he threw at you. You stared him down and it was, well, it was marvellous, as I said. When I saw you come in here, I just had to come and introduce myself.
She had rendered me speechless. I sat there, trying to think of the last time I had received such an impassioned compliment. Then I realised I couldn't actually remember the last time I had received any sort of compliment at all.
Thank you,
I said, after a pause, finally remembering my manners. That's very kind.
Kindness has nothing to do with it. It's a simple fact. Now,
she put down her tea and picked up her bag.
I think it's time I took you to that beautician of mine. You've absolutely earned it.
She took out her purse and left enough money on the table to cover both our orders.
Oh, I couldn't possibly, I said. Nonsense. I insist.
I haven't the time, I added, though I of course had plenty.
You will find the time, she said. I have faith. Besides, it's my treat.
It would be rude of you to say no. A few hours later, feeling entirely spoiled and relaxed, Christine and I headed to a nearby hotel for a glass of bubbly to show off my beautifully decorated fingertips. That's how she'd put it. She told me she did this often, and I was so beguiled by her that I went along with it without question. It seemed so reckless, so decadent, and she refused to let me pay for a single thing. It was bliss just being in her company, and I wanted to keep this dream going for as long as I could. After we'd sipped our way through a couple of glasses, she pointed to a man propping up the bar by himself. He was leering at us in a way that made my skin crawl.
"He's been staring at us since we sat down,"
she said, scrunching up her face in disgust.
"Has he?"
I asked, turning to look.
"I hadn't noticed."
Of course I hadn't. To have noticed would have involved looking away from her, and then I might have missed something magical. The man saw that he had caught our attention and waved, his grubby little fingers rolling up and down by way of greeting. My stomach lurched, and for a moment I thought I might actually vomit. He had that red flush in his cheeks, as if he were an excited schoolboy who'd overexerted himself.
"Right," Christine said, commanding my attention once more. "I think we should have some fun with him."
"What?" I asked, horrified by the suggestion. She laughed, not unkindly.
"Not that kind of fun," she insisted. "Just look at him. So smug, so full of himself. He needs taking down a peg or two, don't you think?"
"But what can we do?" I asked. She smiled, again with that hint of mischief.
"Plenty," she said.
She led me over to him, and I watched, transfixed, as she charmed this man. Every move, every mannerism just oozed charisma, and before long she had the man eating out of the palm of her hands. I watched and studied her, mirroring her movements, and as I did, those movements became less prominent, and the man's attention turned from her to me. It was a fascinating thing. I didn't want him, didn't even like him, quite frankly. I was repelled by him. But the study of manipulating him was rather exciting. To know that I could command a man's attention this way. Me, the useless wife of an inordinately grumpy man.
"It's been a pleasure," Christine said suddenly, taking a small step back from him. "But we really must be going."
"Oh, I'm sure I can persuade you to stay for one more drink," the man said, his arrogance shining through.
"Oh, we couldn't possibly," she said, more firm than before. She took my hand and nodded her goodbye.
I did the same and let her lead me outside into the hotel foyer. We reached the cloakroom and handed in our tickets. As we waited for our coats, I started to wonder what the point of that had been. He had enjoyed himself, that much was certain, so in what way had we punished him?
"I'm not sure how that taught him not to stare at ladies so much," I postulated.
Christine just smiled at me, remaining silent. We took our coats, put them on, and stepped outside onto the street. It was then that she put her hand into her purse and retrieved a large, clearly expensive man's timepiece.
"You stole that from him?"
She nodded. "He won't miss it. Not really. It's his ego that's been bruised, not his wallet."
"But you shouldn't have," I said,
though I could hear myself that the statement lacked conviction. The man had been entirely vulgar, and it almost seemed fair that he'd been punished accordingly.
"I only do it to people who deserve it," she said.
"You've done this before?"
"Impressed?"
she asked, the corner of her mouth going up ever so slightly with delight.
I said nothing, because the truth of it was that, yes, I was very impressed. I knew then that I would follow her anywhere.
The following day, with my newly manicured hands and a tiny piece of paper with Christine's number scribbled on it, in her elegant handwriting, of course, I started the day in a far greater mood than I had in a very long time. To think, only one day prior, I had been so resigned with my life, with my husband, with the monotony of the everyday. I waited for my husband to leave and then almost ran to the telephone. Christine answered after only two rings.
Meredith, darling, she gushed. I'm so glad you called. I tried to speak, but she continued uninterrupted. Listen, you simply must come over. I have such exciting news and I can only tell you.
I arrived at the address she had given me about an hour later and rang the doorbell. She opened the door and showed me inside, guiding me gently with her hand on my shoulder. There was no time for a tour of the place. She was all business.
Meredith, I've invited you here to tell you something of great importance. I value my instincts greatly, and I sincerely hope I have not been incorrect about you.
What is it? I asked.
Not a soul in the world knows the truth about me. Can I trust you to keep my secret?
Why, of course, I'll be the image of discretion.
Right, here it is then, she said. I am the jewel.
At first I thought she was joking, though it quickly dawned on me that despite not having known her for very long, I had seen nothing to suggest she was the joking type, and from what I'd seen of her talents the previous day, it actually made perfect sense.
Say something, she urged.
Okay, you're the jewel. I'm sorry, I don't know what to say. What are your thoughts on the jewel? Let's start there. I don't have any, I said, a little too quickly. She smiled at this. Of course you do, Meredith. You have a mind in there. You just need to remember how to use it. Well, I began. Yes, you can be entirely honest. I assure you, I won't be offended. I thought more about her victims than her, if I'm being honest. Do elaborate, she said, hanging on my every word. Well, I couldn't believe they were so easily duped, I said. And nobody seemed upset afterwards, as if it was all just perfectly normal. Interesting, she paused, taking in what I'd said. But you have no objections, then? To the jewel? None at all. She's like a modern-day Robin Hood, so say the legends. Only taking from those who deserve it, like that man yesterday, I suppose. Punishing those who have escaped justice in other ways. On reflection, I think I rather admire her. I met her eyes then, and hers seemed to sparkle with delight.
That's marvellous, she said. I'm so glad you think that, because I've been thinking it's time I took on an apprentice, and I think you and I would make a great team.
You want me to be your apprentice? She nodded enthusiastically, awaiting my decision. That's a turn up for the books. I thought you just wanted me to do your bidding. I saw her face fall and quickly clarified what I was trying to say. Not that I'd have minded.
What do you think? She urged.
I think I'd be honoured, I exclaimed. I got to my feet and shook her hand, as if this one act would somehow make it all official.
Fantastic! She exclaimed. Marvellous! You'll have to go back to that vile husband of yours, of course, just for the moment. When we have enough money, you can move in here with me.
Wait a moment, I began, but she cut me off as if I hadn't uttered a word.
We'll make him pay for what he's done.
He's not that bad, I protested. That got her attention.
What do you mean he's not that bad? I saw how he treated you.
He has a mouth on him, but he cares about me in his own way.
That's ridiculous. You deserve so much better. They just don't understand how to treat a lady, and together we will make them pay.
Make who pay? I asked.
What are you talking about?
Men, of course. What do you think?
You're wrong,
I said suddenly, violently snapping out of whatever spell she had me under.
Don't say that.
In what way am I wrong? She asked, daring me to back up the statement.
You shouldn't generalise, I said. I'm sure some people, men maybe, have wronged you in the past, and I know that man has wronged me from time to time, but it's stupid to tarnish an entire gender with the same attitude. Then we'd be no better than them, than the ones who believe us incapable of rational, intelligent thought.
She muttered, considering my argument.
You're right, of course, but I will presume them guilty until proven innocent for the moment, I think.
We'll see, I said, unable to keep the smile hidden.
Perhaps I will change your mind.
You're going to be good for business, she said, with the hint of a smile on her lips. And for me too, I suppose.
Like you said, I countered, feeling a confidence I had never felt before. We are going to make a great team. From that day on, she continued to train me, coach me, guide me in the ways of the jewel. Yet she also listened when I spoke, and she learned from me almost as much as I did from her. Before long, we were out there in the world, keeping up the rumours of the enigmatic jewel, and amassing quite a fortune together. We left a path of destroyed but delighted men in our wake, all worthy of their meetings with the jewel, and all with slightly lighter wallets than when they had first encountered us. We were striking fear into the hearts of men who sought to do their women ill, but most of all, we were there to ignite the flames inside all the women whose own passions, feelings, and desires had gone stale, hidden away, dormant, and forgotten, because it was time to wake them up. Now, dear listener, let's talk about you. Let me see those hands.
Short Story Time is a collection of short stories, films, and plays read out for your listening pleasure. These stories are not genre-specific and range from mental health, science fiction, YA romance, adventures for young children, and everything in between. To reach me, find me at Film vs. Book, that's Film vs. Book, on Twitter and Instagram. And stay tuned for a bit of context as to what the inspiration behind this particular story was. So the jewel was for a competition for Harper's Bazaar, I believe, from a few years ago. Can't actually remember what the theme was that they'd recommended, but whatever it was that they'd said the short story had to be about obviously inspired this very fun little story. And though I do love the jewel herself and I love Meredith, and I think they're both really interesting characters who have quite interesting arcs as the story goes on, what I really love and what really tickles me about this story is that to this day, I'm not entirely sure what era I actually set it in, because it was always supposed to be a modern story. But for some reason, when I started writing it, this dated kind of Victorian-esque voice came out for my characters. But of course, I didn't really know it well enough to fully know what would be the appropriate way that they would speak. So it seems really funny to me that I've sort of got mention of a timepiece and they do things that could be then, could be now, like go and have a drink at a hotel bar. And it's just really entertaining to me. And even now reading it, I'm still not entirely sure. I think some of it feels very dated to me. Some of it feels very modern. And I quite like that it hopefully can fit into everything. But obviously the mention of a timepiece, I guess, kind of makes it not sound very modern. But I would be really interested to know, while you were listening, what era you were actually thinking it was in. Maybe that's the fun of it. Maybe you just get to decide for yourself. But anyway, I really enjoyed writing these two characters who are obviously not perfect by any stretch and just really, really interesting. And there's lots of room for both of them to grow. And I think they make a really good team and actually bring a new outlook to the other. So it's quite good to see the two of them joining together at the end. And then bringing you, the listener, into the end of the story. And hopefully you are charmed by it, just like Meredith is.